Welcome back to Training Babble. I'm your host, Dave Schell, and today we are back for another episode of Fast Physiology with Dr. Phil. Phil, thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me, Dave. It's always fun.
Have you taken up the Dr. Phil yet?
No.
Changed all your Instagram handles and everything?
The Dr. Phil. That's what I need to everything to. I have not done that. I think at the most, I've changed my name to like Phil Batterson, PhD. Because I think for some reason that's just a little bit more approachable. People don't get the wrong idea that I'm like a medical doctor or something like that.
Right.
That's about as far as I've gone with it.
Batterson, Phil Batterson, PhD.
Yeah, exactly. Love it's it. A more like 007 sort of thing.
Exactly. So if you are new to this, we've been doing a series of mini podcast called Fast Physiology, where we pick an aspect of physiology or training and then just try to do a semi-deep dive on it. And we alternate back and forth between Training Babble and the Critical Oxygen podcast. Mm-hmm. Today, we are talking about periodization. This is something that I have gone down the rabbit hole many a times, and I have some pretty strong feelings about it. And so I think, let's just start with a general overview of periodization. And let's start there.
Okay.
General overview of periodization historically. And I guess I'll take this one. Just
yeah. I was going to say, is, I was like, ah, oh, yeah. I don't know about that, but yeah, go ahead, Dave.
So in my understanding, periodization kind of started with Tudor Bompa, and Tudor Bompa was, I don't even know what his expertise was or whatever, but it came from studying a lot of like the Eastern Bloc Olympic athletes. And so at that time, doping was rampant and all this other stuff, but basically he looked at what they were doing and then tried to put it into a scheme. And so with that scheme, it came down to this very like rigid structure, which most people would call linear periodization, which is you start with big base, and then after that you start to add on intensity and reduce the volume as you increase intensity and then taper and peak. From that time, there's been other takes on it. Reverse periodization, where you start with intensity and low volume and then over time decrease intensity and add the volume. There's also been block periodization, which is from Vladimir Isserin, I think, where he made the case that athletes that had lots of races over the course of the season, it didn't make sense to have one or two peaks over the course of the season. So he would do focus blocks of just VO2 max or just threshold and kind of cycle through that. You and I kind of talked offline about what we think about periodization. Why don't you give us your thoughts on how you view periodization?
Yeah, so I'll just start with a little bit of my background with it. So I grew up doing, you know, cross country in track, and you know, typically when I actually started to meet, you know, coaches who were, you know, kind of on board with this, they would do like traditional linear periodization, right? They would start in the off season, just accumulate mileage. That's all they want you to do. Just build a base. Don't do any of that. We'll transition to a little bit of like, you know, tempo, like adding in tempo. So adding in a little bit more intensity, but not tons of intensity. And then as you get closer to race season or into race season, you go into your VO2 max work, and then you kind of go into your interval work. And one of the things that always kind of floored me about that was like, well, aren't we losing out on all these adaptations that we're making by, you know, doing nothing except running slow in our base?
Right.
So that started to get me to think. And then I started to listen to Steve Magnus a little bit. And I really like the way he approaches things. He says, you know, you have to touch on all aspects of physiology all the time. So I was like, yeah, that makes a lot of sense, right? Because if you're jumping, hopping, sprinting, VO2 max stuff, tempo stuff, long stuff, short stuff, you know, slow stuff, fast stuff, whatever it is, all year round, but just to differing degrees, then you're not going to have to start from square zero every single time you come back to, you know, that phase, right, of your periodization. So where I'm kind of at right now is I'd like to do something that is less specific and more physiology driven in like the off season or like the quote unquote base phase. Like I find the base phase is a really good time for physiological development based off of testing that I'm doing with athletes or where I know they lack. And then as we get closer to the race season, things get more and more specific leading up to the race. So if you're doing a marathon, then you are going to be doing a lot of time at marathon race, like marathon specific pace,
right,
leading into that race. It's kind of like a triangle effect. And I think what ends up happening is, you know, and there's also, you know, polarized versus pyramidal training. And I think that's also kind of like that's more of a training intensity distribution, but it's also a periodization scheme to some extent. I start then with more of like a polarized sort of training, especially for somebody who is doing long races. So like 10K half marathon and up, because that is the least sport specific. VO2 max work is very non-sport specific for like a marathoner, for example, right? They're not going to be racing at VO2 max. So we do that early on in the season, and then we slowly bring the intensity down, and we bring a little bit of the intensity on the, on more of like the lower end stuff up a little bit so that we kind of hone that point to true marathon pace kind of right before the event. So that's my approach to it now. What's yours?
Yeah. So I guess I want to take a step back. And I think one thing that you said offline, and it's kind of how I look at it too, is we move from less specific to more specific. So the further out from a race you are, the more general the training is, and the closer to a race you get, the more specific it is. I would say mine's kind of, and I hate talking about periodization or whatever, but it's like, it is a mix of different things. And
yeah,
I think for me, I've called it like opportunistic. And the reason I say that is that I live in Colorado. I coach a lot of people that live in the Northern Hemisphere. And so a lot of times in the winter, when we would traditionally be doing base training, you're stuck inside on the trainer.
Mm-hmm.
And people typically don't want to do 3-4 hour rides on the trainer. And so I might, when we're inside on the trainer, we might do shorter, more focused workouts, doing more intensity and kind of touching different things. And then once it gets nicer and they're kind of burned out on structure, now we might build volume. It's like, just go ride your bike outside, mm-hmm. enjoy the weather. And then as we get closer to race, then we get really specific and start to prepare for the demands of the event. And so one thing I wanted to bring up, and I don't know if you've read this, but I think it was by John Kiley. He did a review of like all these different periodization schemes, and the big takeaway was that like, it really doesn't matter.
Like, yeah.
You know, there was no benefit over like structuring things like easy first and then hard, or hard first and then easy. It's like really just, like you said, touching everything at some point during the season, mm-hmm. and then getting specific as you get close to the event.
Yeah. Or I was just going to say, I agree with that. I think too, I was talking to a guy who is a PT, but also trains like hybrid athletes. So strength mm-hmm. and endurance athletes. And one of the things that I've been quote unquote training for lately is kind of health and wellness. And within yeah. that, like being the most versatile is actually going to lead you to the best health outcomes. So, you know, in the non-specific phase, you know, obviously you still want to be doing things like riding your bike if you're a cyclist, or running if you're a runner, but doing things that are not that, right? Like hiking a lot, cross-country skiing, doing other things that allow you to develop other aspects of movement patterns and physiology mm-hmm. actually may prove more beneficial than if you're just riding your bike all year round. Right.
Yeah.
So in the non-specific phase, it doesn't have to be, you know, it's like, oh, well, I'm a runner and I do, you know, my polarized training, and then I, you know, move it towards more pyramidal training. It could be, well, I'm going to train for a race eventually, but right now, because it's snowy outside, I'm going to go do cross country skiing, or I'm going to go do downhill skiing sometimes, or I'm going to, you know, any number of different things, because those are still developing, you know, aspects of your physiology, which should then help to pay dividends down the road.
Yeah, absolutely. And I agree with that. And I think I might use that a lot of times, maybe not in the early season, but more in the fall. So like somebody's had a long race season and stuff like that. And then it's like, okay, now just like take advantage of this fitness you have and go do other things that you've been putting off for the last 9 months.
Right.
But yeah, I think it's important, especially for cyclists. And also for runners, where it's like we're always moving in one plane of motion. And so like to do these other things that challenge those stabilizing muscles and get you moving in different ways and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. So I think now, typically people have already planned their seasons and now we're getting close to racing starting, at least here in Colorado. So, you know, races are starting to happen this month and it really starts to take off May, June, July. So for me, this, like when we're talking about periodization, this is when it really gets to be more about specificity and trying to train for the demands of the event. And so what are some of the things you think about when discussing specificity?
Yeah. So, I mean, I think where it starts, right. And we've touched on this a lot is, you know, if you're a mountain biker, these are opportunities for you to get out and do simulated like race efforts. Right. You know, you don't want the first 30 minutes of your first race to be the first time you're hitting it hard and then going easy, then hitting it hard, then going easy. Because like we talked about in a previous episode, that's a good recipe for cramping because your body simply isn't ready for, you know, like the actual demands of the sport. So it really depends on whatever the demands of the sport are, whatever the race that you're actually doing, start to simulate those. And in the beginning of specific race training, you are not most likely going to be able to maintain a good internal physiological state when you go out and do that, just because, you know, it's like you've been training in the off season, as much as you probably have tried to simulate, you know, race sort of specific stuff like on your trainer and other things like that, there's just nothing that actually simulates going and running on trails or going in and mountain biking up trails or doing a hard start to try to make that hole shot so you get in a good position, right? So I think these are opportunities for you to kind of continue to say measure heart rate, but monitor how you're feeling by like RPE and don't really worry about it. Right. You know, it's one of those workouts where you can go out and, you know, like having a good coach, we're going to give you enough work that it's not going to be too much to absolutely destroy you, but it's going to be just enough for you to get better and get better working at that specific race intensity. And then you'll have enough recovery to come back and continue to work on that. So it's a progression from now we need to start working in like specific race intensities and then working up to that race. We're building more and more of the kind of economy at race intensity, if it were.
Yeah. And I think a big thing that I think about, especially with mountain biking, is building the durability and you, like riding off road, like it can beat you up. It's like bumpy. You're going off things. There's drops, stuff like that. And I always know for me, the first few times I'm able to get back on the trail, the first couple of weeks, I might be pretty sore. Like my ankles are sore. My hands are sore. My neck is sore because I just haven't been riding that way. And so, like you said, you don't want the first time that you're experiencing that to be in a race when you're trying to go as hard as you can. And so it's just another adaptation that we're looking for. And I think it's less on the metabolism side and it's more about just your muscles and your tendons and ligaments and everything getting used to the demands again.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I think like that's where, so typically for me, like in the beginning of the season, like I'll do a lot of efforts based off of, you know, heart rate and other internal physiological variables. But as I'm getting more race specific, that's where I start to turn to more of like the power output based intervals or speed based intervals and those sort of things, because, your heart rate at the end of the day is probably going to be way different when you're caffeinated up, like we talked about on a previous episode, like all this, these other factors, when you're jacked up on adrenaline, you know, going into a race. So you need to be able to manage that first and foremost within the race. But to get a PR it's based off of how fast you get across that finish line, not what your heart rate, average heart rate was during the entire race, even though that could be extremely detrimental if you don't train properly leading up to it. But that's what I try to start to add in, is I start to say, okay, well, we know that you're probably going to be trying, you know, to hit 300 watts or, 6 minutes and 30 seconds per mile or something like that. We need to start actually training at those paces in order to get your body, you know, durable or used to actually working at those paces.
Yeah. And I just kind of adding to your idea about like RPE or perception of effort. A lot of times on the trail, it's like, it's so variable. You can't really give somebody a target. And so, yeah, it's like one of my favorite workouts is hot laps, and it's just go out there and it's do things at race pace, at what you feel is race pace, and it might be a little over or a little under what you actually might do. But it's really just about like, one, getting used to how it's going to feel when you're like climbing a hill as hard as you can or descending at speed, stuff like that. But I think the other thing is just getting used to navigating the trail at race speeds. And I think that's a huge thing. Probably with trail running too, is that our brains are really good at adapting to things. And so if your brain is used to seeing things come at a certain speed, and then all of a sudden they're coming at it faster, it's your timing is going to be off. And so you need to experience the trail at race speed so that you know how to navigate it.
I think too, like when you start to think about mountain biking specifically, or just like gravel racing, I would say anything that you're trying to control a machine while going pretty quick, like trail running, also a good example, you need to practice that, right? There's no substitute. There's no way of actually practicing bike handling indoors, right, on your trainer.
Right.
So those are other aspects of the actual race that are going to come into play, because if you're a better bike handler, then you're going to be expending less energy moving your bike around, doing other things like that. And, you know, at the end of the day, it's like, if you can save a fraction of a piece of energy every turn you're making, or, you know, other things like that, that's going to be super important. So at this point, right, it's like, you need to start to practice that. And yeah. It's like, I've been doing a lot of road running, and if I was like wanting to race a trail race, and I just went and I ran out, you know, my backyard down the trail, I'd probably be pretty sore tomorrow because of the eccentric loading of just running down the trail, right? So there's some level of, you know, physiological adaptations that are transferable from, say, road running to trail running. But in order to get good at trail running, you absolutely have to. So you need to set yourself up, especially now in the specific phase of training, to actually excel at what you're specifically going to do.
Awesome. So now let's talk about kind of the last piece of periodization, and it's what people would call the peak or the taper phase. Mm-hmm. And so it's typically going to be the last, and it's going to vary depending on what people do or whatever. And like, I might taper a runner differently than I taper a cyclist. And so I would say for me, it's typically like 10 to 14 days out that we're going to unload a cyclist. What are your thoughts on that taper period? Do you have something you typically stick to? And then what are the physiological kind of reasons for that? And then what are some of the other things?
Yeah, I've always struggled with tapers because I've had individuals who seem to not need it, right? Like, you know, there's some individuals who you're just like, okay, we're just going to continue to progress your volume and your intensity, you know, up as we get closer. And, you know, there's never really this like huge accumulation of fatigue that then warrants like 2 weeks of easy training leading into a race. Right. There's other athletes who I would say, if you get like a really, really good, say like, you know, peak 2 or 3 weeks, and they are showing signs of accumulation of physiological maladaptation, right? A little bit of overreaching in a sense, then absolutely you need to do something along the lines where you're deloading them. But from what I've seen in the literature and from what I do in practice, it's kind of like, you know, the first week it's anywhere between 25% or, you know, a third reduction in terms of volume, but you're trying to keep some level of intensity. Like, you're trying to actually keep intensity. So if somebody did 8 miles at marathon pace or something like that within a long run, you'd cut the long run down overall, but they'd still be doing 8 miles of marathon pace, right? So that seems to be a really important or a key factor. And then going into, you know, like the next week, then it's another reduction of maybe down to like 50% of what their peak was, or maybe even like maybe even lower than that, right? You know, like 66% reduction in volume, but you're still trying to keep some level of intensity because you got to keep people sharp and ready, because the body is, your body is going to adapt almost immediately to, you know, whatever whatever stresses you're putting upon it. And I think that's one thing people might do a little bit wrong, is they do a very, very aggressive taper and don't keep the intensity. And by not keeping the intensity, you know, you kind of just make everything feel flat because you're not keeping that wheel spinning. I would say that most successfully, you know, I generally do last hard workout like 3 days out or so, just so we can get maximal recovery. And then it's, you know, a few shakeouts. Now, I'm talking mainly about running, a few shakeouts with some strides, maybe like, you know, like a 400 or something like that at race pace, because 400 at race pace shouldn't be too bad. And then, yeah, just hoping that the race goes well.
Yeah. And it, I think what I would say with the taper, I agree with the read the same things, where it's generally you're reducing volume, keeping some of the intensity so that you can keep things sharp. Over the years, I've really just come to the, for me, the taper is really more about the athlete feeling ready to race. And so it's not doing too much. It's not doing, it's like whatever it takes for them to feel confident and ready to race. And some people need more, some people need less. And ultimately, I love having some sort of routine that we can do with every race so that it's like they just don't have to think about it too much. It's like their security blanket or whatever. Like, this is what I do before my race. I don't have to think about it. I'm just on autopilot. I show up at the race ready to go.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's like the same way with, or the same thing with warmups, cool downs, all of that, right? You know, it's like, it's getting you into or out of the mindset of training.
Yeah.
And a taper is kind of similar to that, right? It's getting you in the mindset of racing, but still keeping that similar structure that you would, because what I've found, or what I've heard people talk about, is they're like, oh, I just feel kind of lost when I'm doing my taper because I have so much time and all this other stuff. I'm like, well, you should still be doing a warm up. You should still be doing a cool down, right? And it's the same warm up, pretty similar cool down every single day. You should still be doing a workout every single day. And if you have, you know, a little bit of extra jitters or something, it's like you can go for a walk, because that walk, you know, if we're already reducing your volume by, you know, 50% or, you know, something along those lines, that walk isn't gonna be the difference between you doing well and you not doing well, right?
Yeah.
I will say too that even with effective tapers and all of this, it's like you can't go out expecting to PR every single day or every single time you race. Like, sometimes you just have bad race days. Other days you just have really, really good race days. And if it was as easy as figuring out what the perfect, you know, taper was, then like you said in our supplement episode, then everybody would be doing it.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, so yeah.
Yeah. And I think the literature says that, like, on a perfectly planned taper, it's like the benefit is like 1-3%.
Yeah.
which might make the difference for, like, people at the pointy end, right? And and when races are won or lost by seconds or fractions of a second, but it's like, for the most part, it's like, it's not going to make that big a difference.
Yeah.
And yeah, so I think the bigger, I guess, caution here to a lot of people is that they want to test their fitness and they end up like leaving their race out on the road because they aren't confident in the training they've done. And I guess that's the last thing I'll add to this too, is that the panic training in the last 2 to 3 weeks before a race. And so, like, really physiologically speaking, like, pretty much the hay's in the barn at like 3 weeks out. And so you're not going to do a lot to improve your race time in those last 3 weeks, but you sure could screw it up.
Yes, 100%. And that was, this sort of idea extends to other things. Like, for example, during my PhD, you know, two weeks left in the PhD, and everyone's like, oh my gosh, you must be so nervous. You must be cramming and stuff. I'm like, man, if I didn't learn it in the last 4 years, yeah, exactly. I'm not going to learn it in the next 2 weeks. Like, you know, maybe, you know, like one specific paper, like brushing up on that sort of stuff. But yeah, like, it's the exact same thing, right? You can't, unlike undergrad classes where you can cram the night before for an exam, that is all rote memorization. You cannot cram for a PR in a race. That's just, it's not going to happen. So trust in the training. I think that's what, especially going into the race and the taper and stuff like that, is like, you need to trust in the training and you need to figure out something, like you were saying, Dave, that actually gives you confidence going into the race. Because if you do a taper and you're just like the whole time just a nervous mess, yeah, that's gonna be worse than if you had just gone about training as normal and maybe be like slightly more fatigued going in than, you know, and treating your race as like another long run or something along those lines. So that's the importance of having a coach who can actually figure out what's going to be best for you and what's going to be, you know, best overall for your performance on that given day.
And I want to add something to that too. I think this is something I've experienced with athletes, especially if they have a really big goal and they have that one race on their calendar that's like the race.
Mm-hmm.
Is that sometimes people put all their eggs in one basket. And like you said, there's so many things outside of our control. All you can do is show up and perform your best on the day, whatever that happens to be that day. But you can't control who's going to show up. In the case of bike racing, you might have mechanicals. There might be other stuff that happens. You get caught up in a crash, right? And so I think a lot of times people put so much pressure on themselves to perform on that one race. And then if something happens, it's like catastrophic.
Right.
But I see a lot more breakthrough performances or awesome performances happen when people just kind of show up and like without expectations and they're relaxed. They're in that flow state. They just kind of like do it.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think a lot of people would benefit if they could take that approach to more races. You know, it's like, yes, you always want to do well, but not putting all that pressure on yourself to perform.
Yeah. Yeah. I would say big takeaways are, you know, especially from a periodization point of view, you need to touch on everything all year round, that with specific focuses, you know, throughout the year. As you get closer to your races, you need to be more specific. And, you know, you need to figure out something, especially leading into a race, that's going to be best for you and best for you mentally. Because, like you said, Dave, a lot of people, I think, put too much pressure on themselves to perform on a given day, rather than it's like, okay, you know, now you get to go express all of the work that you actually built up, you know, during that entire, you know, build sort of phase. And it like one, I have a picture somewhere of me in the middle of my Ironman, you know, probably like 75 miles into the bike, and I'm just grinning ear to ear because it was just so much fun. And I was just trying to enjoy the day and talk to people and, you know, just like not put too much pressure on myself. And I didn't do well because I had no idea about nutrition or anything like that, but I finished it and it was a good experience. Like I can walk away with it being like, yeah, I actually had fun because I was talking to people, you know, those are my fondest memories. It wasn't like crossing the finish line. It was, you know, like how did the race go and what was the experience like?
Yeah. I think that's good. And I think my takeaways for this one are, one, there is no magic periodization scheme, and that by and large, it really doesn't matter which order you do things in. I think the important things is being consistent and varying the intensity that you're doing and the durations that you're doing. And I guess one thing I forgot to mention when we were talking about racing, it's like, when we get into the specific part and stuff, like racing is messy. Like when we're inside doing intervals on a treadmill or on a trainer and we're like hitting the intervals exactly and doing 4 times 10 minutes or whatever, it's like, that's not racing. That's not what racing is going to look like. And so like, I think you also need to be messy in your training as well as you get closer to racing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I like that.
All right. Where can people find you, Phil?
Yeah. So as always, you guys can find me mainly on Instagram at critical02. I typically do interactions and business out of there. So if you have any interest in, physiology consulting, if you just have questions about physiology, those sort of things, reach out to me. If you're interested in, coaching, I kind of specialize a little bit more in runners. But I've coached everybody from runners to cyclists to, triathletes in the past. So you can find me on there. You can find other episodes of Fast Physiology on the Critical Oxygen podcast, which can be found on YouTube, can be found on Spotify and Apple Podcasts, really anywhere you get your podcasts. And if you guys have any questions, please reach out to me. That's literally what I love to do, is just answer people's questions. So reach out to me.
Awesome. Thanks again for another fascinating episode of Fast Physiology.
Yeah, thanks, Dave.
Right, take care.